Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal. Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and Clean Label Project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
The following program may contain coarse language, violence, nudity, mature subject matter, or scenes which may not be suitable for all viewers. Viewer discretion is advised.
All Hit Radio.
Welcome to the X-Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
McConnell, we're coming to you from our broadcast center and studios in St. Catharines, Ontario. It's a new day here. It is now Saturday, September the 10th. A very important day to me. It's my dad's birthday. So, Dad, if you are awake listening to the show, may I be the first to wish you a very happy birthday, and thank you for being the number one dad in the world. We're coming to you on the Talkstar Radio Network, Mutual Broadcast Network, and of course on Channel 54 on Simul TV and the X-Zone Broadcast Network. If you'd like to send me an email, X-Zone at XZoneRadioTV.com, and on all social media sites, X-Zone Radio TV. My guest this hour is Stephen, and Stephen, I hope I pronounce your name correctly, Stephen Sekelarius.
Perfect.
Oh, great. And we're going to be talking to Stephen Exonation about reincarnation. So, Stephen, welcome back to the Exon. How are you, sir?
Thank you. Good to see you again.
Good seeing you, too. Stephen, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, I had studied reincarnation from the standpoint of Eastern mysticism since I was like 19 or 20. So I knew about it for a long time. I think I started right out of high school with the Bhagavad Gita, if I remember correctly. And I got a master's degree in counseling and kind of tried to put those two together. But then in 1997, I decided to do a documentary. And I didn't know what it was going to be about. I was starting a video company and I wanted to have some creative project. And I woke up one morning and it's going to be about reincarnation. I don't know how that got decided, but I knew. So it took me 5 years to put that together on a very sparse budget. And in the process of doing that, I learned about that Western research, Dr. Ian Stevenson, and past life regression, and things I'd never heard of before. I learned the best cases, the most strongly proved cases, and the best methods for proving them. And then a couple of years after I released that film, it's called In Another Life, Reincarnation in America. By the time I released it, 2 years later, I found what I thought was a past life of my own as a 19th century author. And I just kind of stumbled on his picture online, and I said, that's me, it's that simple. So I got a little information on him, but I really didn't start researching it in earnest until about 4 years later, 2009, is when I really started digging into it. And the more I dug, the more I found. Because this person, he was only supposed to have like written one series, and he wasn't really supposed to have been that great a guy. And there wasn't anything that remarkable about him. And what I found was he was a literary genius. And I found like over 2,700 of his published works by this time. We're talking 13 years later. had a huge legacy. He was a child prodigy, started publishing in a major Boston newspaper at age 12. He was a spy for the anti-slavery movement, probably answering to William Lloyd Garrison. I didn't remember any of that. It just kind of came up gradually in my research. What I found that he did is fascinating. He, you know, back then it was kind of dangerous to write to your supervisors and tell them who you'd contacted because the mail could get intercepted. They didn't have phones and so on. So he would write this column like a travelogue, or actually several concurrently under different names. And it looked like a very frivolous kind of thing, but he would somehow work in the names of his contacts. So he was using this public travelogue to report back to people like William Lloyd Garrison as to who he had contacted. And if you know what to look for, you could see it. So that was interesting. But what I found that he had researched, what I found that he had written was what really blew me away, because he was responsible for some works that are now famous, that are thought to have been written by other people. And I mean, I was just staying strictly rigorous with all of my research. You know, if I found something that was unflattering, I'd report that. And if I found something that was particularly flattering, I'd just report that. Well, the stuff is so outrageously flattering that people assume that I'm just building up my ego, and I lose everybody. But I just keep putting it out there. You know, whatever it is that I found, I put out there.
What was it like when you discovered this and you were able to see the resemblance, you were able to associate with this person who, in all, was dead, and here you are alive?
Well, what I found is, first off, my emotions are the same. They come right on through, and I believe this is true for everybody. So when I read about things, you know, when he would talk about the death of his first wife, his soulmate, or grieve for her, you know, 15, 20 years later, I felt all that. You know, and when he would feel angry at his works being plagiarized, I'd feel that. When he would feel frustrated that he couldn't get anywhere, you know, and his literary legacy was being lost, I would feel all of that. And sometimes there's a thing called bleed through, past life emotional bleed through, which I've seen in other cases. And for me, it wouldn't kick in for a few hours. I might read something that he'd written about one of these emotional topics, and I wouldn't feel it until maybe half a day later. I'd start feeling, say, very frustrated about my career or my situation. And, you know, where is that coming from? And I realize, oh, that's because 4 hours later, I read this material, you know. So all the emotions are right there. But when I first saw his picture, I looked into his eyes and I just felt it. I said, that's me. I know myself. So it's very powerful sense. The trick is, can you prove it to anybody else? There's proving these things to yourself, and then there's trying to prove it to anybody else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how did you deal with the skepticism that others would feel about your claims?
Well, in my case, 95% of the skepticism is just is like shutting me off and not getting back, snubbing, you know. So how do you feel about that? Well, you know, I try to take it just philosophically. It's frustrating. Sure. But then occasionally, if I get into Facebook groups, you know, and it's understandable, you know, if I'm, you know, kind of attacking a group of people that strongly don't believe in whatever it is I'm trying to present, they start ridiculing, you know. That's a little tougher to take. And the toughest thing is not to react, you know. I mean, I have a thick enough skin at this point that I don't get terribly wounded. But, you have to, what I do is I will argue with them to a point, 1, 2, 3 exchanges, and then I'll just break it off. Yeah, and that's enough. You know, I don't want to get embroiled in this ongoing thing.
So when you first realized that you were this person, how did you make the connection? Did you go through past life regression?
I did for the research. But as far as when I saw that image, it's a 3/4 portrait etching of my past life self when I was about 45. And I saw that, I looked into the eyes, I just knew it right away, you know. I mean, but then the trick is, you know, can I prove it to myself, and then can I prove it to anybody else? And for the first year or so, I wasn't sure. For example, I mean, there were things that looked like contraindications. And one of them was, I would see pictures of his past life birthplace, the farm that he grew up. This is John Greenleaf Whittier's younger brother. So John Greenleaf Whittier's, he's a famous poet, and his birthplace is known. They maintain it like a museum, so you can find a lot of pictures. And I would look at that, and I didn't, to be honest with myself, you know, I tried to be strictly honest. I'd say, I don't feel anything. And I think, how could I be this guy if I don't feel anything? Well, what I learned later is, if you want to get a past life flashback, there has to be a couple conditions. The first one is that it has to be strongly emotional, which this should fit that category. The second one is it has to look as much as possible exactly like it did. And this has been renovated, so it doesn't look like it did. So even though it's the same place, and I live in Portland, Maine, where in my past life I lived for many years, and I can go to physical locations where things happen, but it's, you know, it's been changed and I don't get anything. Except, well, for example, if I go downtown, the only thing that's still the same is one church, First Parish Church, downtown Portland. That I got a big emotional hit on. I said, oh man, I know. The first time I came here and I was confronted with that thing in front of me, I said, I know that, you know. But everything else has changed, so I can go, excuse me, if I hit the microphone, I can go right directly to the physical place where I was and I get nothing. So when I found photographs of this farmhouse, the way it used to look, you know, no paint, kind of worn, you know, worn down and everything, I said, ah, you know, that looks familiar. And then when I actually got inside it, it hit me like a ton of bricks. It was really strong. So it has to look exactly like it used to.
Have you ever gone to your grave?
Yeah, several times. And I get
nothing. What's it like?
Nothing.
Nothing, eh?
I mean, it's intellectually fascinating. And I can generate all kinds of things. Here I am 6 feet above the body that I experienced all these things. And I can get intellectual, but I don't get any feeling. And the reason is, first off, I think the stone has been replaced. If he ever saw that from out of his body, he wouldn't have seen that stone and that scene, you know. And I'm not seeing anything that I ever saw, you know, before. So again, that those things, I mean, plenty of emotion involved. Same thing happened when I went to the place where there was a hotel where he died. This is in East Boston. It's called Maverick Square, and there used to be something called the Maverick House. It was torn down in 1827 or something, and they put up a health center. It's about the same dimensions. It's four stories, and I went in it. I saw a couple, you know, pieces of the old building and so on. And the only thing I got was that when I got out of the car, I felt some pain in my stomach, pressure in my stomach. And I'd forgotten that when I had the one of those hypnotic regressions, I remembered terrible pain, like I might have died of an ulcer or something, which is not in the record, but that's what I remembered. So I could have been subconsciously remembering what I had remembered in the hypnotic session. You know, I try to shoot down my own evidence, you know, as much as I can. But still, I mean, I wasn't thinking about it. And I got out of the car, and that was what I felt. My stomach was not happy, you know. And that was it, right? So I forget your original question, but I mean, it doesn't always happen, but past life bleed through can happen under the right circumstances.
All right, stand by, Stephen. You and I have to take a short break and explanation. If you'd like to find out more about our guest this hour, Stephen's, Sacilarius. Okay, great. Visit his website, goldthread.com. We'll be back on the other side of the short break. Don't go away. Just before we rejoin Stephen, a couple of programming notes here, Exornation. Prior to Stephen coming on, we had Kevin Randall, and if you'd like to find out more about Kevin and his show, A Different Perspective, visit www.kevinrandall.blogspot.com. And for Mission Evolution, as well as Stairway to Heaven by Gwilda Wiaka, go to www.missionevolution.org and www.stairwaytoheavenmedia.com. Stephen Sacilarius is our special guest. We're talking about reincarnation. And Stephen, is reincarnation proof that the spirit or the soul lives on from one existence to the next existence, with the same person?
Yeah, I would say it is. And there's argument about, is it the same person, or in what sense is it the same person? And I think that my particular case and my research, one thing it can contribute is that because I found so many of my past life writings, and a lot of it was autobiographical travelogues, it's basically a diary, and he put a lot of himself into his own writing, that I can compare that huge body of work with my own writing from before I found him and my own personality, and I can see exactly what carried over and exactly what didn't. You know, so as I said, emotions carry over. What I call the higher mind carries over, which is your values, your attitudes, your point of view, things, humor, things like that is all the same.
What kind of research did you do?
Well, you know, again, I patterned it after the research that I'd studied for my documentary. Mm-hmm. So the gold standard is that you want to be able to document impressions, past life impressions. By impressions, I include emotions and feelings. Some people don't. But any kind of impression that I might have, document it, date it, and it has to be before I could ever have known that by any normal means. And in my particular case, all of this literature that I discovered, I couldn't possibly have ever seen that before. So if I document some, you know, some feeling or some emotion or some memory, and then I can find it in what I call the deep historical record, then that's, you know, that's proof. And of course, you want it to be specific. You don't want it to be generic. You want to have as many points as you possibly can, you know, and so on. There's things that make it stronger. But that's basically the idea. You want to remember something, you want to document it, write it down, and then you want to find it in a place that you could never have seen it before. I did that enough times to where I feel like it's a genuine case.
Now, I understand you were able to communicate with your soul on the other side.
Well, with my soulmate on the other side.
I'm sorry, your soulmate.
Yeah, I was. She actually kind of approached me. And then when I realized what was going on, I hired a couple different psychics who acted as mediums for me. This is in 2010, in March of 2010, and again in December, two different ones. Mm-hmm. And I know they were genuine because they made a whole bunch of hits that later on I was able to verify. So they were accurate. But what I asked them to do, without giving them any more information than I absolutely had to, was to put me in touch with my past life wife. And they were able to do that. So once I was able to connect with her, we kind of kept up the connection from there. And I learned how to communicate with her. I'm not really that psychic, but soulmates have a certain amount of psychic rapport anyway. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of use that.
So what was it like when you first made recontacted with her or reconnected with her?
Well, it was pretty amazing. What the medium told me was that she almost called me an hour early because she'd been bombarded with images for a whole hour. Wow. So that was what I took anyway as an indication of how eager Abby was to talk to me, you know. And I've heard that before with other readings. You know, you'll get the psychics will say things like that. So I mean, it's hard to describe. I mean, it happens with people and when they're both physical and they meet each other and they recognize each other immediately. You know, soulmates have an instant rapport and they feel like they've known each other forever, you know, and so on. And it was really only after that that I started finding Matthew's tribute poems to her, which gave me an idea of what she was like. And then I found her literature, her poems and her short stories and so on, and really got a sense of what she was like as a person then, which and how strongly they felt toward each other. He actually kept up that kind of connection himself. So in my past life, I did this too. For a few years, he was involved in spiritualism and he kept up a connection with her for maybe 5, 6, 7 years. And then he kind of couldn't sustain it any longer, I guess. And that happens to people sometimes. I guess he lost faith in it. I don't know what happened exactly. Yeah.
Do you have any marks on your body that you had in your previous life?
Not that I know of, but I have a lot of the same physical complaints. You know,
really?
I know that Matthew had what he called dyspepsia. He talks about it from childhood even. And many times this comes up that he had, you know, acid stomach or upset stomach or a weak stomach or whatever you'd want to call it. And I think he had an ulcer. Honestly, I think that's how he died. But I've been fighting the same kinds of things. I also know he had insomnia. I've had that problem. He tended to push himself too hard, you know, and I do that. I mean, there's several patterns, health patterns that he struggled with that I'm also struggling with.
How has having had past life regression and, you know, the reincarnation factors that you've talked about, how has this helped your present day life?
Well, I tell you, it's patterns. Once you understand the patterns and you understand where they came from, it's very liberating. I mean, you have things that used to be just feel like you were oppressed by things you didn't understand that were happening to you. You know, fate. Now the causes behind the fate are opened up, and you see the whole pattern, and you understand how you've probably created this thing in past lives, and then you have a sense of maybe how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So it gives you a sense of control, I think, I mean, in a sense. I mean, it makes sense. Suddenly all these things that didn't make any sense make sense.
Tell me about your movie, your documentary.
Well, of course, I started it just to have something creative to do.
Right.
But when I got into it, I realized that, okay, first off, I don't want to talk about it as an idea. I don't want to talk about the history of the idea or the history
right.
of belief. I don't want to talk about it as a belief. I want to talk about it as a phenomenon.
Right.
You know, so I want to start right out establishing that it's a phenomenon. So that's why I brought in the work of Dr. Ian Stevenson, because basically this is a real thing. He
right.
proved it. We're talking about an actual thing. Then from there, I want to talk about how are Americans, in this case, it's reincarnation America, it would apply to other countries. How are Americans encountering this actual real thing? So then there's five or six different ways, and that's what the documentary does, is go through one by one the different ways that people have found out about it.
One of the poems that you wrote in your previous life was The Raven. Tell us about that.
Well, when I had one of those past life regressions, this was not in my mind at all.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I seemed to be remembering a personal meeting with Edgar Allan Poe, who I knew almost nothing about. But it was like we were kind of dancing around each other, you know, to kind of see what each other was made of. It wasn't like a potential friendship. It was kind of like sparring. And there was more things that I remembered. But, I mean, that's how it came up. And then gradually, I learned Matthew's style. His meter, his rhythm, and his style. And as I learned more about Abby and got further into the relationship with her, and I saw more of Matthew's poems, including pieces that were written before then, because that was published in 1845, I just realized, my gosh, that's my poem. That's not Edgar Allan Poe, you know. So I had asked one of the psychics about, you know, about this business of having run into Edgar Allan Poe. And she said, you'll find the answer, but you'll have to look very deep into the historical record. So it took me years and years to dig into this thing. And, you know, I finally was able to prove it to my satisfaction. I think it's proved to anybody, but I can't get anybody to take it seriously. So, you know, I can't say that anybody has signed off on it, because nobody will take it seriously mm-hmm. long enough to, or if they will, they won't get back to me. You know, because there's a huge amount of, in academia especially, they're very heavily invested in this having been written by Edgar Allan Poe. There's, for example, the Raven Society, which is, in honor of Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes.
So they're very deeply invested in him having written The Raven, and so is everybody else. In Boston, there's a statue of him with a raven, you know, and it goes on and on and on. And basically, that's like his claim to fame. That's what made him famous, especially as a poet. You know, his detective stories and horror mm-hmm. stories, that's something else. But as a poet, that's basically it. You take that away from him and he basically doesn't have very much, see? So they're hugely invested in it. And it's very difficult to get anybody to take that seriously. But I'm convinced. I've got 18 points of evidence at this point. So,
are you yourself a poet?
I can't. It's like for Matthew, it just, like, even poetry, I think he had to actually get over a little writer's block. But basically, mm-hmm. he can just, you know, write just off the top of his head. And I can do that with my blog. But with poetry, I have to really sit down and make myself do it. But I can. I can rise to the occasion if I have to. I have on a few occasions just to see if I could do it. Same with short stories and so on.
Now, you've studied Eastern... let me see, Eastern mysticism. Has the study of Eastern mysticism helped you to better understand the reincarnation aspect of existence?
Well, yeah. I mean, I certainly had the theory before mm-hmm. before I ever started researching. I didn't have the research per se, but I had the teachings.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, Other people who are involved in mysticism would see it as a sidetrack. I feel like it's important for me because I feel like I incarnated to kind of put my past life legacy back together. So there's that personal element. And then it also, I think, is very important for society, to Western society, to come to grips with this thing. Because without this, there's a huge gap, there's a huge hole, and people fill that hole with existentialism or with heaven and hell. There's all kinds of things they fill it with, but they're not adequate. They're not satisfying, and they're toxic, frankly. I mean, the whole idea of eternal hell is hugely toxic. And to me, atheism is toxic because there's no meaning, see? So, you know, reincarnation puts everything in perspective, and it fills this huge gap that had been taken out of Western society's understanding. So I feel like it's really important to do that. So both for the personal element and also to give back to society and try to help society, I feel like I'm doing it for those reasons. In terms of mysticism, it can be kind of a sidetrack in the sense that a mystic is supposed to be trying to experience a relationship with God within, you know, in this very lifetime. And what they say, if you talk to mystics about reincarnation, it's not good to get too far into it. It's kind of a sidetrack.
You and I have to take our break. Please stand by. Stephen Sakellarius is our special guest. And if you'd like to contact Stephen, goldthread.com. This is the X Zone. I am Rob McConnell. We're coming to you from our broadcast center and studios in St. Catharines, Ontario. And if you'd like to find out more about the X Zone, www.xzoneradiotv.com. And check us out online at xzbn.net. Don't go away. Stephen, why do you think that more people do not believe in reincarnation? Why are certain religious philosophies foo-fooing it and saying, no, it doesn't exist? And if, I know this is a loaded question, but if reincarnation was to be more widely accepted, because it would be proven to more people than enough, that would bring it into the mainstream realm of reality, how do you think this would affect society?
Well, those are good questions. I don't know why reincarnation is the poor red-headed stepchild of the paranormal, but it is. Mm-hmm. Of all the paranormal topics, it's probably the least popular. And what I do know is that, of course, it means that you're not your physical body. And that's not all that popular an idea for a lot of people. But that you can get from near-death experiences. You can get that from mediumship, other things that are a lot more popular. You can get the same message there. But if you bring karma into it, and not everybody does, but it kind of follows, it means 100% accountability. And, yes, you know, we had 100% accountability with heaven and hell. And mm-hmm. we finally got that yoke thrown off. See, you know, as a society, we discredited religion. We've thrown that, and good riddance to eternal hell, you know. But we've got the idea now that we can do whatever we want. We can think whatever we want. We can indulge in whatever fantasy we want. And we can, basically, if we don't get arrested, we can do anything we want, and we're not accountable. There's no accountability, no cosmic accountability. Mm-hmm. Well, reincarnation brings that back, 100% cosmic accountability, see? So that's not very popular, you know? So, you don't have to think in terms of sin, but the Eastern teachers say think in terms of error. And that was originally what sin was, as I understand. It was like missing the mark, you know? It's like you missed the bullseye, you know? So mm-hmm. suddenly that comes back. That's a guess. I don't really know. Now, as to if reincarnation was mainstream, and this works against what I'm trying to do, but the truth of the matter is, like I'll get into YouTube and I will look for videos that have to do with reincarnation, and I'll put links to my papers. This is one way that I try to get, you know, use social media to get a toehold in there. And you see some pretty awful interpretations. I mean, they get worse and worse. So what happens when ignorant people get hold of a exalted idea is they muddy it up, you know? So if reincarnation went mainstream, you'd have a few people that that really understood it properly, and then you'd have a whole bunch of people that dumbed it down and didn't understand it and misused it. And that's the truth of the matter. So it's, I consider it a sufficient, it's a necessary but not sufficient condition of the overall enlightenment of society, you know, just raising up to a new level of vibration, which I'm sure you're familiar with. It has to be in there, but it's not going to be enough by itself.
So I would imagine that when it comes to reincarnation, as well as many other subjects, a little bit of knowledge is dangerous.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, there's all kinds of actual dangers that can come from it. I mean, you can get this past life bleed through effect. You can get people who suddenly remember that they were, you know, in a relationship with such and such a person who's now married, and they, you know, insist that they've got to have her or they've got to have him, and, you know, kind of create havoc like a, you know, bull in a china shop. There's that issue. It can be psychologically confusing. I mean, I'm pretty stable. I've got a master's in counseling. I know what I'm doing, but I wouldn't recommend that everybody delve as deeply into a past life as what I've done.
Well, that brings up an interesting point. If somebody wanted to delve into past life or reincarnation, as you have done, to that depth, should they do it with a professional like yourself working through the process with them?
Well, I wouldn't take that on myself, that responsibility. But I think it depends on motive. You know, why are you doing it? If it's just out of curiosity, I'd be a little cautious about that.
All right, taking on the responsibility, if somebody goes to a medium or a past life regressionist, are they not taking on the responsibility for this person when they actually start regressing them to the point where reincarnation has been proven to be this person?
Yeah, of course they are. Now, there's some past life therapists that do it to, you know, they can cure phobias, and I mean quickly, you know, serious phobias, two or three sessions and it's gone, including physical effects. You know, it's a tremendously powerful therapy tool. And this is for people that where nothing else has worked, and, you know, two or three sessions and they're cured, you know, incredibly powerful. So they will say it doesn't matter if the memories are real or not. What matters is that they help cure people, you know, and there's others that feel that it is important. I personally feel that it's important. But every once in a while, you'll get a past life therapy case where there's proof, there's evidence, you know, there's cases where they remembered something that they couldn't possibly have known, and it was so specific, and there were so many of them that it's clear that they proved the actual past life. And, you know, I don't know. There may be people that aren't really stable enough to handle that. I do sometimes feel confused. If I immerse myself in my past life writing, I get kind of confused as to who I am sometimes.
Really? It makes me wonder if we look at the Bible and the second coming of Christ. Is this a reference to reincarnation?
Well, I think that was a kind of a special case. And you can take it on a lot of different levels, you know. You can, because first off, Christ is a spirit, and then it's Christ, the spirit of Christ, or the spiritual entity of Christ, incarnates periodically, as I understand, into a person, as a person. And so are you talking about that, or are you talking about the influence of that spirit as a whole? See, so it's like there's two different things, and you have to decide which you're talking about.
No, I was just trying to see if there was some way that we could add credibility to the reincarnation concept, or in your case, you know, hey, here I am. I know who I am. I'm secure. I'm a secure person. I'm well taught, and I've done the research. Here's reincarnation. You've put a lot of work and hard work and dedication into the research that you've done. Whereas if we were to give an example of, well, you know, Christ said that, you know, the second coming of Christ is actually a reference, or could be perceived as a reference, to validate reincarnation.
Well, Jesus apparently taught this, and there are a few shreds of references to it in the New Testament. And I found a passage in the Gospel of Thomas, which of course didn't make it into the mainstream Bible, where if I read the parable correctly, and I think I do, he talks about reincarnation. And he talks about what I call Vedanta, which is, in a nutshell, is, you know, that the soul, the person is trying to find their deepest self, the pearl of great price. And after several incarnations, eventually they find it. And having found it, then they can teach others. That's what the parable says. But I mean, it's right there. I think it's actually the words of Jesus that Thomas recorded, and that it's authentic. You know, I don't have it in front of me, or I'd read it. But so it's in there. You just have to know where to look. The problem is denial, is people just shut out information if they don't want it. It's not that the information isn't there.
Mm-hmm. But wouldn't it be easier now with the internet and the opening up of the mind to greater possibilities that more and more people would be showing interest in reincarnation?
Well, they definitely are, because if I look back to when I released my documentary, I started my website in 1998. So, you know, if we go back to 1998 and compare the kind of reception that I got then and how many people were talking about it then relative to now, there's a lot more interest and a lot more acceptance, relatively.
All right, we've got to take our final break. Please stand by. And Exo Nation, if you'd like to find out more information about our guest this hour, Stephen, oh my gosh, I have a problem with this one. Sakellarius. All right.
I quickly say it's www.ial.goldthread.com. I put the subdomain in there.
Okay. So it's not goldthread.com?
Yeah, it's ial.goldthread.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
In St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada. Once again, if you'd like to send me an email, xzone@xzoneradiotv.com, and you can always check out the great programming we have available for you on the X-Zone Broadcast Network on xzbn.net. Don't go away. And welcome back. Stephen Sakellarius is our special guest of this hour. And Stephen, why have you stopped only at one past life or one reincarnation?
Well, I do have intimations or feelings about other ones, but they're not possible to prove. You know, I mean, it's that simple. I they're too far back, or there's no way to identify that person. There's one that might even be more recent, and I haven't been able to identify that person. So I go with the one I can prove.
Now, when you're doing the research into your past lives, do you do this through a medium?
Well, I used the two, but I didn't use any more after that. What I did was I found a volunteer researcher, first of all, for the first year. And she lived pretty close to the area that Matthew had grown up in. Mm-hmm. And what she would do is she would find information and she would send it to me and I would react to it. So she would send me, for example, a list of the men that Matthew worked with late in his life when he was in Boston. And I would read them and I said, this one rings a bell. I really feel strongly about this one. And then we would research it and we would find, was there some reason, you know, why? For example, there was one where I was looking up a newspaper that I knew that Matthew had written for, the Boston Chronotype, and I found the name of a man who had edited that, and there's a thumbnail in his name. And so I clicked on that thumbnail And when it was a full-size picture, this was a portrait in like profile. Mm-hmm. And I had an experience where he turned to me and he smiled. And I felt very strongly that that was a very close friend. You know, it was very strong feelings. And then I was able to prove that they worked together at the Boston Custom House for 14 years. You know, I don't have anything that says they were friends, but they had a whole lot in common. And they were co-workers for 14 years. So it's a pretty safe bet that they were exactly what I felt. So that's the way the research proceeded. I would encounter some bit of information, and then I would document my reactions to that, any thoughts that came through or any feelings or whatever it was. And then as the research progressed, I'd see if I was right or not. And I tried to be very honest with myself, you know, was I accurate or not?
Now, when you communicate with your past, which you, your past wife, I believe, right?
Yeah, and I consider her my wife now.
Oh, okay, your wife now. How do you do it? Through Medium, or do you have a technique that you've developed in order to do a direct contact?
She taught me two methods. And the first one, and I've got it in a book. So, I mean, I could go back to that book and look and, mm-hmm. and tell you how it happened. But she taught me something kind of like dowsing, but with my fingers. So I would hang my hands, you know, very loose. And then, you know, like that would be yes, and that would be no, and that would be kind of a, you've asked the wrong question, or it's something else.
Oh, I see.
You know, just basic yes or no stuff. And of course, there's a lot of potential for me to be fooling myself in that, mm-hmm. admittedly. But she was able to prove that it was real, and that she was real, especially the first few months, you know, to the point where I trusted that it was actual. And the communication method is pretty accurate. You know, she's pretty accurate. And then she taught me telepathy, which is like, and I've heard a lot of other mediums mm-hmm. express the same thing. But what I experience is what I call thought bursts. It's like a whole paragraph of thoughts in one burst. Apparently, they're at a much faster rate of vibration up there. So, you know, when you get something from them, it, you know, and then you have to unpack, you know, a whole bunch of information mm-hmm. basically from that. And I wouldn't say that's as accurate, but I found it to be accurate at times. You know, I take it with a little grain of salt. And then I try channeling her, and it's not like she takes over or anything. What I do is I try to tune in, and then I'll type stream of consciousness. I'm a very fast typist. And she says to just get rolling, you know, talk about anything and just get rolling. And then if I start getting telepathic thoughts from her, I'll go from one to the next in a chain of association, right? And sometimes I can get off on a tangent and the whole thing is bogus. But there's mm-hmm. been times I've had other people, I used to put it online as her journal, you know, and they say, oh, it's definitely channeling, because, you know, when you go back and read it, that's not me, you know, that's her.
How were you able to verify she is who she says she is and not just some mischievous spirit having fun at your expense?
Well, I mean, there's feelings as well as thoughts that go with this. And the other thing, as I said, that I found a whole bunch of material where Matthew talked about her in tribute poetry, and I found her writing and so on. So I found a sense of who she was well after we'd been communicating. So I can recognize, yeah, that's the same person I've been communicating with. There was one case in which I can't prove it. And that was all of a sudden, I don't know why I had this impulse, but I just put out my arms and I said, come to me, like that.
Right.
And I felt, I've heard other people describe this, but it was an electric presence, tangible, you know, like static electricity, but, you know, all up and down my mm-hmm. whole body. And it was like, as long as I held my arms out, which might have been 20 seconds or 30 seconds,
right.
you know, I felt that, and I felt the personality with it, you know. Now, I can't prove that that wasn't some other spirit. You know, it's the only time that ever happened. I've gotten what I call electric kisses, where I'll feel a like electric sensation on my forehead, or, you know, the top of my head or whatever. And I'm pretty sure that's her. But this one case, it was so tangible. And it's almost like, I think there's certain things they're permitted to do and certain things they're not permitted to do with people on Earth. And responsive things are not necessarily permitted. You know, in other words, I'm going to count to three and I want you to do such and such. I've mm-hmm. had a couple experiences like that, but very few. This was responsive. I put my arms out. I felt this presence, you know. It was definitely not a coincidence. And there was another instance like that where I had two cats at the time. And they started looking at, you know, in one part of the room. And I said, well, that must be Abby sitting there. And so I said, Abby, if that's you, move to the other side of the room. And the cats went like that.
Wow.
You know, responsive. But it's almost like you're not supposed to, I don't think they're supposed to do responsive things if they don't have permission. You know, that's just my feeling about it. So it's been pretty rare that she did stuff like that, more in the early part.
Has she ever tried to manifest her image so that you could actually see her?
I had a visitation dream, one, mm-hmm. with her, and that was early on. And we were driving in something like the Holland Tunnel. I was driving, and I got, it was probably symbolic. My mind created the Holland Tunnel, and we were in the tunnel between worlds. And she was the passenger, and we had a long conversation. I got a very good look at her. I don't know what we said, but toward the end, I turned to her, and suddenly I was becoming lucid. You know, I was starting to wake up. And I said, you know, you're not a real girl. I'm making you up. I'm imagining you. And mm-hmm. she said, oh, is that so? And then I woke up, see? Well, I knew what I had just seen. So I got on Google immediately, and I went to images, and I downloaded like 13 images, 12, because two were the same, of women that looked kind of like her in one way or another. And it was 2 weeks later that I found her historical portrait. And I wish I could show you. You know, I have no copyright permission for those images, but they're mm-hmm. very close. Some of them are remarkably close, you know. So that was like, that was proof, basically, that visitation dream was real. But she hasn't, like, appeared in the room or anything like that. And I've told her I want that. And I think she said, oh, you'd probably have a heart attack, you know, if I did that. But anyway, for some reason, either it's too much energy, she doesn't have permission or whatever, but she hasn't done that. She manifests electrically, but not, like, physically. Now, if Stephen, I had a medium, that might be a different yeah. story. Yeah.
Stephen, we're coming down to the final couple of minutes of the show. First of all, thank you very much for joining us. A fascinating time with you. What are your final thoughts, and what is the message that you'd like to share with the X-Zone Nation tonight?
Well, what I've been trying to do for several years, and this may seem kind of self-serving, but Matthew and Abby apparently were the real authors of A Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. Matthew was the real author of The Raven and Annabelle Lee. And there's a couple other famous, like Elizabeth Barrett Browning. She stole like 5 poems from Matthew and one of Abby's. Margaret Fuller, a whole bunch of the stuff she's famous for as a philosopher, that was actually Matthew. I've been trying to get people to pay attention to this because that's my door into, you know, that's my door. And it's like, if you don't believe me, it's utter nonsense. But yeah. if anybody understands, I've actually got the evidence for this stuff. I mean, real hard evidence for this stuff. It could open the door to the whole thing of being taken seriously. You know, that's my entrance into academia, into society, to try to get my work out there in a way that people pay attention to it. So it's kind of like, you know, they're going to ignore me until they don't. And if they don't, the whole thing's going to blow wide open, basically.
Stephen, thank you so much. Take care of yourself. Continued success. And please let us know if you find any evidence that we could help you with.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much.
Have a nice weekend, sir. All right, X-Zone Nation, when we come back from this commercial break, Gloria Prima is going to be joining me, and a very interesting lady. We're going to be talking about science and the paranormal. This is the X-Zone. I'm Rob McConnell. Don't go away.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.